Okay.
I'm going to actually remember to introduce ourselves again.
Oh, yeah. We haven't been saying our names anymore.
They know.
No. I feel like now is a good point for me to... A couple of recordings ago, we were talking about plants, and we were arguing the definitions of, like, a flower versus a spade. What is it?
Oh, yeah.
So I actually looked it up, and I'm like, I think this, like, before we get into the actual topic, this is the time for me to talk about that, because I actually looked it up. So a flower is a modified shoot, and it's the reproductive organ of the plant. Like, that part we know. That's important because a spathe is not a flower. A spathe is a modified leaf.
Oh. Okay. So would that be like what an anubias flower is then? Because they look very leafy.
Yes. But what you think is the petal, that is the spathe. That is not a flower, though.
Wow.
So what you're seeing is there'll be like that... Let's talk about like a calla lily.
Mm-hmm.
Not a lily. Peace lily.
Yeah.
That's not a petal. That's a spathe. And then you'll see that little like tube coming up the top. That's the inflorescence. That is actually a cluster of flowers. So if you, each little bump is an individual flower.
Wow. That's amazing.
So an inflorescence is and I'm going to look down in my notes. A cluster of flowers arranged on a floral axis is the biological definition.
All right.
Well, that explains a lot of those terms that we see in our plant book. Flower, inflorescence, spathe, like the difference between them.
Yeah.
It's very interesting.
Good. Thanks, Charles.
Yeah.
All right.
All right. On to the fun topic of algae. And we're specifically talking about algae in freshwater aquariums right now. We did a podcast not long ago about Cleanup Crew. And I think we talked a lot about saltwater algae.
Yeah, we definitely got into it.
So we should first talk specifically about what is an algae. And oh, by the way, we're going to add some cyanobacteria into this discussion as well, because they are actually not algae. What's an algae?
I believe they're classed as protists, which make
That's
them
correct.
Very different than, so like the two main lineages of life, I guess, would be protists, which don't really have organelles, and then eukaryotes, which have specified organelles, which are like the little things inside the cell that do stuff like, you know, mitochondria.
Well, first we should talk about like what's going to cause algae. And one of the things that we like to talk about around here with a planet aquarium is the tripod of things plants need. And that's also the tripod that causes algae. And so the three legs of that tripod would be carbon dioxide, nutrients, and light. If you have an algae issue, you have an imbalance of one of those three things. Either too much or too little of something causing limiting factors for plant growth, or a lack of plants, which would, you know, by definition, you could still call that a limiting factor.
Yeah, true.
Where when light is going into the tank, photosynthesis happens for a long time in plants that uses up the available carbon dioxide and nutrients. If the light is still there and one of those, either the CO2 or the nutrients, drop off, the plants can no longer photosynthesize. Algae still can. Or if the light's been on for too long, and the plants stop photosynthesizing just because it's time to rest, because plants need sleep too. That can cause the imbalance. And then the algae can take advantage of the nutrients that are there.
So this is where I'm going to get right back to my talking about a fringe habitat. If you look at any habitat parameter and think of it along a bell curve, and the height of that bell curve is the ideal parameter for, let's say, aquatic plants. When you start getting towards the sides and it's going down, that means it's less and less ideal for the plant. That makes it...
The fringe habitat.
The fringe habitat.
I like it.
Yeah, because healthy good. Plants in that ideal environment are incredibly well-suited to out-compete algae. They are just better at it than algae is, because algae is better at surviving in a wider range of habitats versus growing as well in that ideal. That's the simplest way, I think, to understand it. Yeah. If plants are growing well, algae usually isn't.
Yep.
Yep. Definitely. And so how do you get it in your tank? This, we get this sometimes where a customer will come into the store and say, oh, I bought this so-and-so from such and such a place, and now I have algae in my tank. So they introduced the algae in my tank. So here's what I'd like you to do if you think that's how you got algae. Take a glass of water, put some form of nutrient in it. It won't take much. It could be a little bit of dirt from outside, and we're talking a BB-sized amount of dirt, and put it in the sun. You will get algae to grow in that.
Yeah. Even fresh tap water.
Fresh tap water. Algae comes from spores in the air almost all the time. And the amount of different algae that can be distributed from spores in the air is incredible. It can just show up.
You're breathing it right now.
Gross.
So how did that algae get in your tank? Lots of different ways. It wasn't introduced to your tank and now you have a problem by somebody who was irresponsible. It had the opportunity to grow in your tank because of an imbalance.
Yeah. And snails, the same thing, right? You're not going to get this crazy, insane snail infestation just because you got one or two off of a plant. It's because of something else that's going on in the tank.
So, I got snails in my intake filter. I got like snails growing all over my plants. I got them. They're like, there's so many of them that my gravel's moving. So, how much are you feeding?
Yeah.
Cause, guarantee that's your problem here.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. Overfeeding accounts for so many of the problems that we see here. Yeah. Those extra nutrients are perfect for algae and perfect for snails. So if you have pests, it's because you're feeding the pest.
Yep.
So maybe then if we're going to start from there, maybe we should talk about some different types of algae and snails, how to get rid of them, do we want to go into that kind of pest discussion?
Yeah, for sure.
Let's start with my favorite. Let's talk about how to kill my hair algae.
There's not much that I know of in freshwater that eats hair algae other than shrimp.
Amano shrimp are amazing.
They're beasts at tearing that up.
Lots of barbs eat shrimp.
That's true.
Hair algae, actually.
Pretty much all barbs eat shrimp.
Rosy barbs are fantastic hair algae.
That's true.
They do an amazing job at it. Those filamentosa barbs we had in, like, they were so voracious for it that I literally told all the new people that if you're pulling hair algae out of tanks, don't throw it away. Just put it in with those barbs.
Yeah, they'll love it.
Yeah, or if we got a piece of driftwood that was covered in it, you'd put it in there, it'd be gone in a couple of hours.
One of the challenges with some of the hair algae is, and finding cleanup crews for them, is hair algae have a more similar consistency to a lot of desirable plants. So many things that do eat hair algae will also eat some of the desirable plants, like those filamentosa barbs.
Yeah.
Some of the softer leaf plants are definitely on the menu.
There was a reason why we only kept Anubias with them.
Yeah, but Amano shrimp, I've never seen Amano shrimp eating a healthy plant.
Nope. They are fantastic hair algae eaters. And no plant tank should be without Amano shrimp.
Yeah. I do think that to some degree, you're going to get a little bit of algae in every tank. That's just, it's a natural part of that ecosystem.
Yep.
And when we're putting in things, there's no way it's always going to be perfectly balanced that plants are going to get everything that they need, and algae is going to get nothing that they need. So having a cleanup crew is a good idea, but don't think that you don't have to clean your tank if you throw in 50 Amano shrimp. Right.
Yeah. I often have a conversation with people almost daily where I'm like, well, you need to think about these not as a solution, but as like a helper to give you time to react to whatever you're doing wrong. Yep.
A little bit of ambient light can throw that light balance off really easily. And that can cause a little bit of algae growth where some of the great cleanup crew options are going to be needed, like an Amano shrimp. In planted tanks, otocinclus to me are just fantastic. Yeah. A little army of little autos just trucking all over the place will just green film algae will just disappear.
Yeah, we have a cube tank in the window in a corner.
Right.
Getting light from
the sun.
Yeah, from three sides.
Yeah.
Probably four, just by how much ambient light is in there. And the little army of autos, there's almost no film algae on the glass anymore. It's pretty amazing. Yeah. And I think 10 of them in there, something like that. 8 of them.
Yep.
in larger tanks, bristlenose plecos, at least for most of their lives, do that job pretty well too for the film algae.
They're fantastic at it. Mm-hmm. They can occasionally turn over to munching on some plants if they run out of food. Usually if they've got some algae tabs in there every once in a while, or if they have algae to eat, that's really going to be their preference.
Yeah, and driftwood. I think that people underfeed their plecos a little bit because they're more omnivores than they are pure herbivores. Mm-hmm. And mm-hmm. most of the pleco wafers on the market are not very good.
True.
But we've got those Cero ones right now that we've really been liking because they've got a little bit of driftwood in them.
It's almost like we did some testing to try because we didn't like the ones we had.
Stay away from common plecos unless you have a 180-gallon tank or larger.
Yeah, I can't even see a reason to get them other than if you just like giant catfish.
And have a giant tank.
Yeah, because they stop eating algae around the time they'll start being way too big for your tank.
Right.
And then they just don't eat it much anymore forever.
I was not exaggerating when I said 180 gallons or larger. That's really how big a tank you need to appropriately house a common pleco. You can go buy them for $1.99 in any big box store or any grocery store that sells fish or lots of other fish stores. But we did a whole podcast about this, fish that don't belong in the hobby, and common pleco is one of them.
Yeah.
That's like a 15 to 18 fish average. Not as in, this is a max size, so it may or may not. No, that's the average.
Yeah.
Up to 30.
Yeah.
Yeah. And it's so hard to call people out for keeping in tanks in too small of sizes because you're lucky if it's not a 10 gallon. Yeah. Like I see them in 75s. I see them in 125s and it's hard to say, no, you can't. Cause they're just out there.
Yep.
But 180 I think is way more realistic.
Yeah. And if you walk into a lot of big box stores, hey, I need a sucker fish to clean my tank. They're going to bag up a common pleco for you.
Yeah. And you don't need anything to clean your tank. You should be cleaning your tank.
Yeah. I said earlier, they are not a solution. They are not a substitute for you doing maintenance on your tank. They are a helper to give you time to react if something goes out of balance. And it will eventually. It's like strange how that works. You know, mm-hmm. natural ecosystems are not perfectly balanced all the time.
Right.
Yeah. So the other fantastic algae eaters, we talked a little bit about people feeling negatively about snails, but snails are also, nerite snails and mystery snails, I think, belong in so many tanks.
I wouldn't disagree with that.
Especially for a little bit of film algae cleanup.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Mysteries, you do have to watch some of the softer leaf plants as well.
Yeah, they're close enough to apple snails that they're going to pick at them a little bit.
So there's some scientific suggestion out there that it's actually the same species.
Really?
Yep.
I've never heard of apple snails being able to be kept in a planted tank. I wonder if that's just, I don't know, preference.
You know, it might just be different lifestyles. Like there's sneaker males and then there are the alpha males. Maybe we're just getting the sneaker male snails.
Although the mystery snails, from what I've heard and read, do usually cap out at around like a year and a half or 2 years.
Right.
And the apple snails that I've heard of can live a long time. It could be a lifestyle thing too.
Yeah.
I don't know. That's really interesting.
Or maybe if they're kept more like an apple snail, they'll live longer.
It's true. Although, yeah, I don't know. Maybe if you did feed them a lot of that like dying plant matter. Anyway, I don't know. That's interesting. I haven't had much interaction with the bigger apple snails. I would like to play around with them sometime.
And I think there's a place for some planted aquariums. I'm not saying everyone, for like ram's horn snails.
Yeah, I love ram's horns. Any nano tank, I mean, a mystery snail in a small tank does provide a pretty good amount of bio load that a ram's horn would not.
That's true.
Like a bowl or a 2.5 or something like that. And there are some really cool varieties of ram's horn too.
We're working on I'm not sure if Ben has been made aware of this. I've been working on a blue shell strain downstairs of ram's horns.
You did tell me that. I like
okay,
that.
Good.
They're really pretty. And we've got some leopards around too that are spotty.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I've been trying to figure out where I want to put some of those.
Yeah. So snails, we do need to worry about versus snails that we don't. We talked a little bit about apple snails, so keep an eye on your mysteries because they look identical and possibly are. Ram's horns, I've never seen a ram's horn eat a healthy plant leaf.
Right.
Bladder and pond snails.
Sometimes can be a problem.
But with enough other food available, I haven't seen it happen much.
The one controversial one, I think, is the Malaysian trumpet or Malaysian live bearing snail, because they are more of a burrowing snail. And I think they do a great job of keeping soil or substrate aerated and moved around.
Mm-hmm.
If they do get into a filter, they can reproduce in the filter as well, and they can damage the inner workings of a filter. If there's a whole bunch of them. And
yeah.
I've seen that. And I've seen that in healthy aquariums where they got under the impeller, they ground down the impeller, and had to replace the impeller.
I believe
so
that.
So there's some concern with those guys because they do have a very, very hard shell.
Yeah, amazingly hard. Like for those tiny little things.
Right.
And... Because they have to be able to dig down under all these rocks and things like that. But I wouldn't dream of setting up a planted tank without them.
I agree. And once you got them, you aren't getting rid of them.
No. But in a well-managed, properly fed tank, they don't get out of control.
Exactly.
I never see mine outside of the substrate. If they were, they would get eaten in my tank. But that's beside the point.
Right.
Malaysian trumpets, fantastic.
Yep.
What about rabbit snails?
I've been researching rabbit snails a little bit lately, and there's lots of reports of them eating some plants, but there's also lots of reports of them only eating dead plant material. And I've seen them in tanks with a bunch of dead plant material, and the dead plant material disappears. Baby rabbit snails show up, and the regular plants in the aquariums seem unaffected by it. So... I don't know that they're really necessarily going after good, healthy plants. I think they just want the dead plant material.
Yeah, it's easier. I think people expect a little too much out of their scavengers.
Mm-hmm.
Like, they're going to take what they can get. They'd rather take an easy meal versus a hard meal.
Right.
So if you had no food available for rabbit snails, would they eat plants?
Maybe.
Maybe. But can you blame them?
Yeah.
And I would say the same for most of the stuff we're talking about. Bristlenose plecos are a great example.
Right.
We see bristlenose plecos eating plants in tanks that have 20 of them in there and no algae.
And no driftwood.
And no driftwood. Yeah. So can you blame them?
Right. Right. It's a pretty obvious, like the scoring from a bristlenose pleco. Imagine if you'd take a leaf from a sword plant and rub it with sandpaper.
Yeah.
That's what it looks like if a pleco is eating. They don't eat from the outside. They don't like munch holes in. They scrape.
Yeah. Yeah. I think people blame poor plant growth on things eating it too much.
Yeah.
It's not their fault your plants aren't growing.
Yeah. My general response to stuff like that is I genuinely don't keep any cleaner things in any of my tanks. And I tell people when I get asked, oh, should I have a bristlenose pleco? I'm like, do you want a bristlenose pleco?
That's the perfect response.
Yeah.
Because I'm like, do I want that fish? Not particularly. So I'm not going to get it. I don't really have a particular desire for a working class fish in my tank, you know?
You just want those hoity toity fish.
And so, I maintain my tanks to the degree I want them to be at. And anything else is kind of like, the hair algae is fine in there.
But in freshwater, doing a water change is so easy that, well, you could add a bristlenose pleco to eat your algae, or you could make it harder for your algae to grow. I think that if you're adding a big, messy fish to clean up your algae, you are adding to the problem as much as you're solving it.
Yeah. But if you like bristlenose plecos, I like core cats. I like auto cats. So it's not unusual for me to have them in my tank, but I don't in a tank, I should say. I have multiple tanks, but the tank is normally designed to have them live in there, not for them to do some sort of job for me.
Right. It's okay to get fish just because you like them.
Yeah. And if you don't want them, maintain your tank a little bit better, and then you'll have room for some other fish you want. That's a perfectly viable option too.
Yeah.
Definitely.
Okay. So What's the number one cause of algae, of unwanted algae in an aquarium?
Nutrient buildup.
I don't think so.
No?
Nope.
You think it's light?
I think it's light.
You might be right about that. The amount
if you had a tank with tons of nutrient buildup and no light, it wouldn't grow algae.
It's
true. If you had a tank with almost zero, or we'll say zero excessive nutrient buildup and too much light,
you're still getting algae.
You're getting algae.
It kind of feels like we're competing over last place here. But I think you might be right.
If we're talking about algae control and somebody comes in and says, hey, I got a bunch of algae. What should I do about it?
Mm-hmm.
The very first question that we ask is, how long are your lights on?
Yeah.
And that's true.
Yep. That is true. And often it's like, I think the most common scenario I get is, well, I turn the lights on when I wake up in the morning.
Yep.
And I turn the lights off when I go to bed at night.
Yep. There's the source.
Usually when I remember. Because right. You're not going to remember every day. I know I can't. I've tried and I've failed every single time to remember to switch my light on and off at a specific time every day.
I can use my aquarium at home as an example. I have one aquarium at home. It's a 90-gallon, very well planted, very well established aquarium. It's been set up for, I think I've been saying 12 years now for 2 years. So I think we might be at 14, but maybe it's been 1 year.
Which means we can round up to 15.
Yeah, it's a 10 to 15 long time. I have not cleaned the front glass on that aquarium in years.
Like wow.
Maybe 5 or 6 years and maybe longer. Longer, I don't remember. I know I've cleaned it a couple of times. The light is on a timer. It is on for 9 hours a day.
Mm-hmm.
It's in a basement. It gets zero ambient light. I do not. And when I say I haven't cleaned the glass, it's because I don't have to.
The tank looks beautiful.
There's zero nuisance algae in that aquarium.
And I think your algae control, your algae eaters in there are a couple of a mono shrimp.
I have a couple of mono shrimp and I have a couple of true Siamese algae eaters.
Mm-hmm.
But at the size they are, they're not really doing much for film algae. They might make sure there's no hair algae at all, but they're not doing anything for film algae at that size. They're in the 7 or 8 year range. Yeah. And by the way, somebody told me one time a mono shrimp only lived for like 2 to 3 years. And that's a lie.
Apparently.
Mine are pushing 10 years old at least.
That's amazing.
Yep.
Wow.
And we have a couple of monos in some of the displays here that were like ancient when I started working here.
Yeah. And that have moved 2 or 3 times. Mm-hmm. They're really amazing animals.
So let's address light a little bit more.
Yeah.
So the two factors when you're determining, okay, so light is the issue. The two factors would be intensity and duration.
Mm-hmm.
Duration's an easy one. If it's on longer than 8 hours a day, you might be able to get away with 10 hours a day if it's a densely planted aquarium.
Yeah.
If it's longer than 10 hours a day, at 10 hours, those plants are tired and they're ready to go to sleep and they are not photosynthesizing anymore.
Yeah, and I'll point out that those 24-hour lights are usually on for a cumulative 12 hours. They ramp up and ramp down. I have repeatedly had to say, sorry, you got to turn it off 24-hour mode.
Yeah.
Because it will grow algae.
Yep.
And
unless you have everything else perfectly balanced.
Yeah.
But who does?
No, I mean, nobody. Nobody. And those are cool lights, and the controllability is fun, but like that 12-hour ramp up, ramp down cycle just grows algae unless you're really going crazy with plants.
Yeah.
And the getting up and turning it on before you go to work, well, that's, let's say 9 is when you turn it on. And does anybody go to bed earlier than 9 p.m. here? So that's like 12 hours plus we're talking about.
Yeah, and many of the people that are doing that, they're at work at 8 o'clock, so they're turning it on at 7.
Right.
And they're turning it off at 10.
Yeah, yeah, like I'm being generous here. And so don't do that. Get a cheap mechanical timer.
Yep. Or a cheap smart plug. I got a 3-pack for $24.99 on that big website everybody buys stuff on.
And turn it on for when you're going to be home. The plants don't know what time it is outside or they don't need to.
Right.
So if you turn it on at 6 p.m. and turn it off in the middle of the night, that's fine. If that's when you're awake, then have it on at that time.
Right. My light at home turns on at, I think it's three, no, it's two, and it goes off at midnight.
Yeah.
And I have, I know people who do like split times.
Mm-hmm.
Like they'll have it on for like 2 hours when they're home in the morning, then it'll turn off when they're leaving for work.
Yep.
And then it'll turn on not too long before they'll get home from work, and it'll be on while they're home.
It's not optimum for the plant growth, but
it's less optimum for the algae.
It's less that does work.
Yeah, I think something like 4 hours is the minimum amount to really be like up and running photosynthesizing and then be able to rest. But as long as they're getting, like, even if you split it into two of those, I think would mm-hmm. be perfectly functional for your plants.
Mm-hmm. So that covers duration.
Mm-hmm.
If you have an algae problem and your lights are on longer than 8 to 10 hours a day, first step, cut the duration.
Mm-hmm.
Intensity.
Yeah, I can share a little bit on this one because I just bought a kick-ass light for my new, I have the ADA60P and I bought a Twin Star light for it.
Badass.
Yeah, it's a gorgeous setup. You know, it's really cool. It looks terrible. Because I upgraded the tank, I upgraded the light, and I didn't change anything else.
Oh, yep.
I'm not really fertilizing much more. I'm not injecting CO2 in there. It's a pretty lightly stocked tank. It's got one fish in it that's a bigger fish, and it is covered in algae. It's also a little bit close to being in front of the window. But I'm moving, so like that's the right plan. I knew that was going to happen.
Did you get the Twin Star S?
No, I got the C.
You got the C.
But it's a narrower tank, so it's enough for it. Yep. And it's growing algae. It's not a surprise. I knew that was going to happen. But I raised up one of those tripod legs. I just increased light. I didn't increase nutrients or really address them in any way, and I didn't increase CO2. So my light is too intense. I'm going to get algae.
Yep. I would say the first step in reducing algae control in that situation, if you can't dim the light, and who wants to dim the light when they have a sweet light? Like
no, it's beautiful.
The first step is CO2 over nutrients.
Yeah, I think so.
Yep.
And really, it's tearing down that setup and setting up the tank I actually want.
Well, that's true. That's true. But if we're talking, you know, if we're talking in the hypothetical at this point again, okay, you just realized you just blew it.
Mm-hmm.
And you went for intensity, and now you have this kick-ass light, and you have algae control. What's the first step in controlling it?
Yeah.
Well, first step I would say is make sure that you have planted the heck out of that aquarium.
Yep.
Enough plants to utilize all of the light.
I'm just going to interrupt you and say it again so that we can have this tagline there.
Yep.
The best defense against algal growth is good plant growth.
Yes.
Absolutely.
Yes. So good plant growth, first you need enough of it, and then CO2.
Yeah.
Over nutrient.
Yeah. And I've got good soil, so like the nutrients are there if I had the plants there.
Yeah.
Although my hair grass is growing without CO2.
Nice. Mm-hmm. Well, and there's a Twin Star, I'm not surprised.
Yeah, it's amazing.
Right.
But yep, I think that's the next step for that tank. It's going to need CO2. There aren't a lot of scenarios where we'd say you need CO2, but if you're pumping in that much light, you just might.
You might.
Yeah.
Now we do have some of those Twin Star C series
mm-hmm.
on non CO2 tanks without algae issues.
There's more plants in there.
Plants.
Yeah.
Plants.
Funny plants. How that works.
Grow plants.
Grow plants, yep. And it's just better maintained. Yeah. But yeah, there was already a little bit of algae before. Adding that just blew it up. That tank is so out of balance.
Right. So I would say, I'm going to just go back to an equipment discussion. The Twin Star C and E series, I think you can get away without CO2.
I think you
as
could.
As long as you plant the heck out of them.
Yeah.
The S series.
Good luck.
Yeah, I think I would agree with that.
Yep.
And then the 24-hour lights, like any brand of them, if you're running that cycle, you're going to need to plant the heck out of them. The intensity, the duration is too much.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm really hoping we have a few people listening that they're like, oh, darn, the solution is I need more plants.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, how awful.
Yeah, I hate to prescribe that as a solution to people because it seems like we're just trying to sell them something, but it really does help.
Oh, yeah.
Just that competition.
Yep.
Yep. I would argue there is a third factor if you've eliminated the other two.
Okay.
Which is light spectrum.
Ooh, good call. Well yeah. done. Yes.
Improper light spectrum can definitely play a role in algae growth because it's a fringe habitat organism. So if you're outside that ideal range, you're definitely skewing it towards the advantage in the algal growth. I can remember my mom had a big, like 75 planet aquarium, and this was like 15 years ago. Mm-hmm. So it was all fluorescence.
Right.
And we would know when it was time to replace the bulbs when we started having algae problems.
Absolutely. That spectral shift happened so dramatically with fluorescence.
Yeah. And so it's like, you know, 6 to 8 months down the line, we'd be like, oh, time to replace them.
Thank goodness we have LEDs now. And yeah. Don't have to do that. But that was definitely a thing that with fluorescent lights, that spectral shift that happens. And you wouldn't, it happens so gradually that you can't perceive it happening. But when you swapped out those bulbs,
oh,
holy cow, it would look like it was way more light. And it is more light. But it's not just more light, it's better light. And the algae will go away.
Plants
yeah.
will go,
yeah.
Ah, thank you.
This is my moment.
Yeah, I think the main example of that now is those like cheap grow light LEDs you can get at like a hardware store or something like yes. that. And algae is not an issue when you're growing potted plants or terrestrial plants of any kind, right. really. Right. But a cheap light just has the wrong spectrum. They always do. Right. And that's what you're paying for when you get a planted aquarium light, is for that to actually work to grow your plants and not just algae. Yep.
Yeah, I think a lot of people really underestimate how good water is at filtering out light. And so when they're like getting those grow lights, I'm like, you're buying a light that's designed to put light through air, not water. This is a very different prospect.
Yeah. It just straight up is not the same thing.
Yep. All right, so we talked about some algae control methods. We've talked about some causes for algae. We've talked about some natural control methods and some stuff the aquarist can do to control algae.
I have a topic related to that I'd like to talk about.
I'm listening.
So the black brush algae.
Oh, yeah.
I was just going to get to that. So let's talk about some different types of nuisance algae.
Yeah.
Black brush, black beard, cyanobacteria.
Okay.
Technically not an algae.
Black brush on the surface is just a really cool organism to me.
Oh, it's so cool. Only cool in a biological sense and really annoying in a practical Aquarius sense because of that.
Yes.
They're one that's capable of, like, once they fix, like, I think it's nitrogen.
I think it's phosphate.
Oh, okay. Yeah. That makes a lot more sense. Yep. Phosphate. They're capable of self-sustaining.
Yes.
So even if you get the phosphate under control in your tank,
they feed themselves.
They feed themselves.
They feed off each other.
That's so cool.
Right.
And that's so cool. But that
it's
means
such a pain in the ass.
But that means that they're awful to try to get rid of.
That means once you have an algae like that, you can't just change a parameter to get rid of it. You have to find a way to physically get rid of it.
So in the Madagascar lace plant downstairs, if you'll recall a specific YouTube video where we talked about a product called Flourish Excel.
Yes.
So right after we finished filming that, you were like, hey, can you start dosing that in that tank?
Yeah.
And then we both started dosing it at the same time.
So then we coordinated our attack.
Nice.
If you look at it now versus then, the black brush is definitely dying off.
Significant reduction.
Yeah.
It's not going to happen overnight.
Nope.
But it's black brush algae. Nothing you're going to do is going to happen overnight with that stuff.
And I will argue that annoying as it is, if it's not growing on your plants, it actually looks kind of cool. In that tank, it is growing on your plants.
See, we've had this discussion before about stuff that it can have a cool look, and I get it. I can't get past it. Something I don't want, so how can I like it?
And driftwood, I think it looks pretty.
Yeah, that's fine.
On rocks,
you know, I get it.
You just
I
can't
totally
separate
understand
it.
That it can look. It can. I can't make the separation.
Like mine in my tank went away without my intervention because my buffalo head cichlids eat it.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
Well, that's fun.
Yeah. And it was, they would like keep it in check, and then they had a bunch of babies, and now it's just completely gone. Those are one of the only things that I know of that do. The rosy barbs we talked about earlier.
And the rosy barbs.
And Pandagara.
Pandagaras are great at eating it.
They
don't get all of it.
No.
But they're probably the best. Actually, juvenile, true Siamese algae eaters will also eat it.
Just not when they get to that adult stage. Yeah.
They mature and then they move on to other things.
Pandagaras are definitely the best, like, jack of all trades algae eater, I think.
Yeah.
Yeah, no algae eater does them all, but few do as many as pandagaras do.
Yeah.
And I've never seen them do any damage to a plant.
No. So I wouldn't say they specialize in algae because they are omnivores, but they seem to eat a little bit of every single kind.
Mm-hmm. We love those guys here. They're so fun.
And they're playful.
Yep.
Yeah. But Excel, yes, we're definitely proving that it does work to break up black brush and other algae too.
Yeah. I'm just going to comment real quick. We mentioned rosy barbs. Early in the podcast, we said several different species of barb will eat hair algae. Rosy barbs are the only ones I have specific experience eating black brush. I assume many other barbs might eat black brush, but I cannot tell you with any certainty that they do.
I know Odessa barbs will also do a great job with hair algae. Let's do an experiment and see if they eat blackbeard.
Okay.
That would be a fun experiment to try.
Yeah.
Yeah.
See what different species eat what different types of algae.
Mm-hmm.
That would be fun. Mm-hmm.
Stay tuned. There's probably a YouTube video coming out.
There's definitely a video there.
Just going to write that down real quick.
There we go. Another one of my favorite algaes to deal with. Green water.
Ooh, yeah.
It's another one that can be borderline self-sustaining. And one of the big challenges with green water is it seems to only happen on planet aquariums because they need that intense light.
Yeah.
But then there's your limiting factor, right? Because you're trying to balance, okay, I've got the tripod, I've got the light, I've got the CO2, and I've got the fertilizer. And the green water says, oh, you have the light. Well, we're just going to make it so you can't get the light to the plants.
Yeah.
Yep. It's another one of those that once it hits, I've tried all kinds of different remedies for that. All the things you read on that interweb, all you kids are talking about these days, none of them really work super effectively. So blackouts and changing the light and Excel and hydrogen peroxide, put a UV sterilizer on it.
I think you're going to have to, I think you're going to have to put a UV sterilizer, and my experience is get your phosphate down.
Yeah. If you got it in the first place, it's usually for a reason, but once it gets there,
it's
a pain
hard to get rid of.
Yeah.
Unless you put a UV sterilizer. Yeah. Unless you put a UV sterilizer on it, then it's easy.
Yeah. Lately we've only ever gotten it in tanks that are way too high in phosphates or are getting more light than the plants can use.
Yeah, the timer got messed up.
Yeah.
And it was on 24/7. Or there's one of the programmable lights we've been using on a regular basis that has Bluetooth compatibility, and for some reason it keeps losing connection and stays on 24/7.
I think it's because there's 5 or 6 different phones connected to it. Yeah, that probably doesn't help.
No.
That's true.
I'm just going to outright say this, and Amy can edit it out. It's not cool, but I'm going to outright say she mentioned, oh, the phosphate's too high. I've been specifically working on dosing regimens and different like ways to dose in our water, meaning GR tap water.
Right.
Because we are of the opinion, and we're starting to get the data to say, oh, that's pretty founded belief that what is ideal for many parts of the country, like Seattle, Boston, South Carolina, where a lot of these brands are produced, like the all-in-ones, they don't really mesh well with GR tap water because A, we're hard water, and B, we have agricultural runoff, so we already have phosphate in our water.
Well, and C, we live in an older city where they put phosphate in the water to deal with lead pipes.
Yeah.
Phosphate is it's not just agricultural runoff in Grand Rapids. It is added to the water as a specific lead control.
See, that one I did not know.
Right. No, I didn't know that. That's really interesting.
Phosphate bonds with lead. Phosphate bonds with oxides, right? So in saltwater, people know this, that we use granular ferric oxide or aluminum oxide to remove as a phosphate remover. It's because that bonds to oxide, to metal oxides. Lead pipe, phosphate bonds to the lead pipe, and that forms a barrier.
Wow.
It forms a shield that prevents the lead from leaching into the water.
That is really cool.
It is very cool.
Right. So if one of the issues that happened with the Flint water crisis is they added something to the water that removed a bunch of the phosphate.
Oh.
Wow.
Right.
That's crazy. Mm-hmm. Wow.
The more you know banner flies across the screen.
Yeah.
But yeah, so stay tuned for that. We're definitely producing a YouTube video. This is like, I think 2 months in the making at this point.
Yeah.
I've been testing several different lines. And I'm going to preface it here now. I'm not here to talk bad about any product.
No.
I think even the ones that I don't think are good for our water here, testing them has made me really appreciate how much effort went into producing these products. As I'm like, these are really great, but not for my water.
Yeah. Like, and the spoiler alert on this is not every fertilizer can solve every issue for every type of water in the world.
Yes. That's
shocker,
that's
right?
It. Yep,
yeah.
That's it.
But
that doesn't mean that, and I want to be very clear on that. That does not mean that if a fertilizer doesn't work for you, there's something wrong with that fertilizer. It just means it's not the right fertilizer for you.
Yeah.
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 But knowing your local water does make a huge difference in how you can dose it, how you can use it properly.
Right.
Definitely. We've talked about how doing, like, you do frequent water changes for your breeding tanks and how that ends up serving your plants well by reintroducing minerals and those kinds of things for them. So different type styles of fish keeping work differently to limit algae and to encourage growth.
Yeah, I give root tabs to my crips and I don't do any other dosing. And we figured out through this process of testing water and stuff that I'm basically fertilizing just because I'm doing water changes that much.
With West Michigan tap water, that's something you're definitely doing. I've tested some well water for people, and the nitrates and phosphates in some of the wells around here are they're beyond what's healthy for a normal aquarium.
Yeah, not to mention ammonia sometimes.
Yeah, we've had ammonia in there as well, but we had people come in the shop that they're like, you know, my fish just don't seem great. Well, let's test your water. And we tested their water and the nitrates were in, it was like already turning like purple.
It's crazy.
And I said, oh, you guys really, we got to talk about feeding. You're overfeeding. I said, we haven't fed the tank yet. It was their tap water, the nitrates in their tap water. And then we tested their phosphates and the phosphates were the same way. And what we said to them was, A, plant the heck out of that aquarium.
Yeah.
Or B, buy water.
Yeah, or have your sister in the next town over bring it over every time she comes.
That's a tough discussion to have with some people that, you know, they just spent all this money on an aquarium and then all of a sudden they realize their source water isn't good enough.
Yeah, if you have an algae problem that you can't get past, check the source.
Test your tap water.
Test your tap water, test your RO if you're using that. We're not talking about salt water right now, but
this is for fresh
water. Exchange the filters in that if that's what you're really trying to limit. Mm-hmm. That's one of the steps that we take is test the source water and see if you're just starting off on a bad foot.
Yeah.
Around here, that's not that uncommon.
Just about anybody with well water.
Yeah.
Just about anybody with municipal water is probably going to have, with some exceptions, acceptable water for many types of freshwater aquariums.
Yeah.
Did I say that with enough disclaimers?
I think so.
Yeah.
There are factors that could change that, but I would say if you have local city water, you're safe.
You can do an aquarium with that.
Yeah.
Yep. If you live in Atlanta, you're better off with saltwater fish. If you live in Chicago, you're better off with African cichlids. Or fish that are tolerant to higher pHs.
Exactly.
Many of them are. right?
Yeah.
And there's different water profiles wherever you are in the country based on where the water comes from. And municipalities are going to pull out a lot of the stuff that wells aren't.
Right.
Just because it's safe to drink doesn't mean it's safe to breathe if you're a fish.
True.
So we talked about hair algae, black brush. We touched on film algaes. Mm-hmm. We have not talked specifically about cyanobacteria.
Cyanobacteria is almost like if regular bacteria and an algae got together one night and had a baby. So that's on a super, like, super basic level, but it's a little, they're kind of a cross between the two.
Hmm.
Yeah, I've heard some people argue that the types of chloroplast in vascular plants are descended from cyanobacteria.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
That's intriguing, but yeah. Beyond the scope of my being able to talk about that topic.
So it's like basically a huge genetic difference, but in an aquarium, they're pretty functionally the same as cyanobacteria and an algae.
Kind of, but I mean, it definitely has to do with, you know, it's a different chloroplast, right?
Yeah.
Because green plants and green algae photosynthesize similarly.
Mm-hmm.
Red plants, algae, don't photosynthesize the same at all. And there's a strong, dramatic lineage, like early break when you're talking about algae, between red algae, brown algae, and green algae. Those are three very, very distinct, way up there on the division level.
Oh, wow.
Right? Way up there. Whereas, you know, we know with a plant that sometimes they get some red in them and sometimes they get some green in them, but that is a completely different mechanism.
Wow.
And so cyanobacteria, there are very few of them that use the same green chloroplasts. They use some of the same isn't the word, some of the similar ones that some of the red algae use.
Like a similar mechanism.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. But there's to try to say, so what's the difference?
Well, how many hours do you have?
Yeah. Let's get out the 30,000 page textbook to, you're talking cellular.
So is it like, what's the difference between a mammal and a bird? Or is it, what's the difference between a plant and an animal?
A mammal and a fungus.
Okay.
It's
no further.
Probably further. Yeah. It's further. Insane.
Wow.
Yeah.
Crazy. So how do we have to deal with them differently in aquariums then?
The self-feeding thing is the big one. And you had the good technical term.
Oh, phosphate fixing?
Phosphate fixing. That's the big one. Plants and true algae are not capable of phosphate fixing. Cyanobacteria are.
So while for film algae, hair algae, and those familiar ones like that, we could just cut off the source and eventually they'll starve and die out. That's not going to happen with a cyanobacteria as easily.
No, you have to physically kill it.
Yep.
And could that be cutting off the source and removing physically the algae?
Yes. Yeah,
that would do it.
Okay.
Yep.
Because I think that's the most common method that we recommend here, which is basically get your phosphates and nitrates under control. Continually remove the algae every time you're maintaining the tank, and then it's less likely to come back. But
and that could be removing it with something that eats it.
Yeah.
Although I don't know anything that eats like the film cyanos.
Like the blue-green algae?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Actually, even otters will eat blue-green algae.
Really? Mm-hmm. That's so cool.
They won't eat black-beard algae, but they will eat some of the blue-green algae films.
And even if they don't, stirring it up and getting it sucked into the filter,
that can help.
That helps.
Yep.
If you're cutting off the source of what it's growing onto.
Right.
Because even a bristle nose, well, it's not going to eat the blue-green algae off your driftwood, but it will keep snuffling along so that it
detaches, will
disturb
goes
it and make it less likely to totally anchor down.
Yeah.
That's a really good point, because now that I'm thinking about it, if you look at our sand bottom tanks downstairs, you notice the one with Cory cats in them don't really have a cyano problem on the bottom.
Also remember that when you're talking about blue-green algaes and whether or not something's going to eat it, you can make the analogy that if you've got something that eats this particular blue-green algae, it might not eat that blue-green algae. And that's as good of an example as saying you could have a mammal that eats this plant but not this tree.
Yeah.
Because it's that different.
Yeah.
I mean, it's that the branches of life at that point, they count. When you get down to the genus and species level with a blue-green algae, there is different because it's a kingdom.
That's not so wild.
Yeah. Or is it a domain?
I think it's a domain.
I think that you're right. I think it's
way the heck up there.
It's like, yeah, basically saying, so what eats a plant?
Right. Yep. Now they're a little, they're simpler.
Yeah.
They're less complex. So there's more that can generally eat more of them, but they're the fact that, you know, the black beard algae versus a red slime in a freshwater tank or a green slime, cyanobacteria in a freshwater tank, lots of things will eat the green slime in a freshwater tank. It's a cyanobacteria. So why doesn't it eat the black beard algae?
Right.
The same reason a moth might eat this type of plant, but not this type of plant.
Yeah.
Or, you know, the same reason that I might, you know, eat a carrot, but I'm not going to go chewing on the nearest oak tree.
Yeah, and yeah, it's so hard for us as humans to contextualize, I think, the genuine difference that, like, the difference between film algae, green cyanobacteria, and let's say a freshwater moss. Like, yeah. What is really that difference? They look all the same to us, and it's worlds apart.
Right.
Farther apart than us and, I don't know, a panda bear.
Yep.
And this isn't like algae or plant related, but I'm going to give you a quick plug because this is a video I'm working on. So, preview. I get a lot of questions where like people will be like, well, what, this food isn't good for this fish and this fish. And like what I hear in my head every time is, what, you mean I can't feed steaks to a wolf, a blue whale, and a gorilla?
Yeah, that's the right way to say that.
Yeah.
I want something good for all my fish.
Well,
it's pretty fortunate when you think about it that with a lot of the community aquariums, we have come up with some foods that you can feed to a tremendous variation of fish and have it be okay.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You can feed mollies, blue gouramis, neon tetras, and a lot of betta species and a lot of cichlid species, all the same stuff.
I'm giving a like hands in the air expression.
Yeah.
It's great.
Yeah. Yep. Compared to like go to any pet store and say you're going to feed your dog cat food and see the types of looks that you get.
Right.
But yes. Keeping fish is a little simpler than that.
Yeah. We're digressing.
That is a digression, but it's so cool to think about all these different organisms that we're able to maintain together. Yep. People don't appreciate enough how much of a feat it is to keep all these things together.
Which is
in
her
a way
nice way
that's
of saying,
beneficial to all of them.
Which is her nice way of saying that anyone that keeps these tanks is a badass.
Yeah.
That's true.
Absolutely. There's no other area of animal keeping that you get to do that.
You get to create an ecosystem.
Yeah.
Yep.
So cool.
I love it.
Even if algae is part of it. Right. And that's the point we're trying to make, is that you are keeping an ecosystem, and so much of that is about balance.
Yes.
And yeah, algae is always going to be there, but you got to balance it.
Yep. Balance and control.
And I'm just going to give our quick blurb. Having an algae problem, either have a light or a nutrient problem, most likely.
Yes.
Got a snail overload? Almost definitely you're overfeeding.
Yeah. Overfeeding, feed less, water change more. That's going to be the lesson almost every single time.
And I was going to say cut back on the light, but I'm going to say control the light.
True.
Yep.
True.
Yep.
Yeah. Don't put your tank by a window. That's a good place to start.
Yes. Ambient light and sun. That's always a good one. If sunlight is touching your aquarium, it will grow algae.
I think spectrum is a big part of that.
Yeah.
Yeah. The warm light spectrum. Algae loves it.
Yep. Yep.
Shallow water.
Well, there we go. I think we've touched on algae. I think we haven't touched. I think we've talked about it in depth. It's everything you've ever wanted to know and nothing you don't need to know.
Well, probably a little more than you need to know.
Put questions in the comment section below.
Send it to us. I mean, we're definitely gonna post on Facebook, like a little thing about this. That's where the discussion will mainly be. But you can also send us an email at podcast@watercolorsaquariumgallery.com. Send us a message on Facebook. Wherever you can reach us, definitely reach out.
Check us out on YouTube. I've been having fun making videos.
Yeah, Charles has been doing a ton of research for us, and right. We've gotten to learn a lot of cool things lately.
Yep, it's been very cool. Thank you so much for listening, and have lots of fun, and keep those hands wet.